principles within the session. So it's an honor to be here at the annual Capital League Sulfur Shipping Forum to discuss the global shipping markets, a sector that has always been dynamic and is now once again navigating this great era of turbulence and transformation. So today, I will take you through the challenges of reshaping global shipping, so what it is actually turbulence and transformation. So these are economic uncertainties and trade disruptions to shifting regulations. Then we will have a very brief sector-by-sector outlook on the dry bulk, on tankers and containers, exploring key trends that are driving their future, and then we can turn to the alternative. And then we will see some facts on decarbonization. So the shipping industry has always been cyclical, but today's challenges are structural and not just cyclical. And we will start now by looking on what is shaking our markets today. So why do we see a strong correlation between economic activity and seaborne trade? Different sectors respond at different speed to macroeconomic forces. Global shipping cannot rely solely on economic growth to drive trade anymore. So we must factor in policy-driven disruptions, regulatory shifts, and evolving fuel economics that will now be the key market drivers. Moving on, trade policy is now a structural force shaping shipping. We must track this development not just as a short-term disruptions, but as long-term market realignments, as it has been proved that besides the trade tariff implications, all those geopolitical shifts in the horizon have actually made countries to trade more with friends. And this is likely to continue to happen more in the future. So friend countries are countries that tend to think alike in very simple terms. We are witnessing the U.S.-China trade war volume 2, with its far-reaching consequences, with new U.S. tariffs, 10% on all Chinese imports that affect close to 67 million tons of single trade. And that we had China that retaliated with a response of 15% tariffs on U.S. coal, energy, and crude oil, affecting close to 23 million tons of shipments. So bulk containers are the most affected. Dry bulk and oil tankers are not immune. Yeah. So if tariffs escalate further, we could see further trade diversification, especially in grains, energy, and energy markets. There's also some potential for further escalation with a fair and reciprocal plan, just announced last Friday from President Trump, which will happen towards springtime, where widespread trade disputes influence global economic and trade growth and investor sentiment. So, however, for what we have now in place, for crude oil, U.S.-China trade stands around 0.4% of global seaborne crude oil, with European and Asian countries other than China to have accounted for most of the recent very strong U.S. exports. On the other hand, Middle East and Russia are the main for crude oil exporters to China. Similarly, in dry bulk trade, tariffs are receiving flows here again. The introduction of 15% tariffs on U.S. coal is currently unlikely to significantly impact Chinese coal import leaks, but meantime, U.S.-China grain trade stands at around 8%. So in the previous trade war, the impact was a minus 5% reduction of the grain ton miles. And this places, a key risk if tariffs escalate. However, China has diversified its grain trade, trading more now with Brazil. So let's now take a look at where we are in the shipping market cycle by looking a little bit on historical earnings and asset price trends. on the debtor side today. We have the historical average earnings, those key civic servants, containers, on tankers, dry bulk carriers. As you can see, earnings were very volatile, and we have a lot of spikes and troughs and bad days because for the past 6 years, the whole shipping industry has been under a lot of disruptions and turbulences. The start of 2025 found all sectors in very good terms, except for the dry bulk carriers, but it was a seasonal trend. On the other side, we have the year-to-date asset price growth compared to the 10-year average price of a 10-year-old asset and a new building asset. And this gives us a sense of how seed values have evolved. So container ships have shown the strongest appreciation, especially the mid-range, from the 2,600 TEUs to 4,500 TEUs, where you can see a vessel price growth close to or above 90%. So this reflects strong demand, particularly for mid-sized tonnage in the container sector. In contrast, the tanker prices have been mixed. The same for the dry bulk carriers. We only see some moderate appreciation on the cape size, both in the second-hand asset, also in the new building. So this data underlines where we are currently on the market cycle, where containers having experienced a significant price correction post-peak, while tankers and the dry bulk carriers are in different phases of their own market cycles. However, it must be noted here that second-hand prices have not followed the freight market at the same rate of increase as they trade at higher levels. The dry bulk market is undergoing structural shifts in fleet demand and supply dynamics. The estimated deadweight demand, which reflects the vessel capacity required to transport global seaborne dry bulk trade, has shown a steady but measured increase. So despite fluctuations in the total trade volume measured in ton-mile terms, the deadweight demand has been influenced by changes in trade distances, vessel speeds, and operational efficiency. So some key highlights here would be that the ton-mile is outpacing the ton growth, indicating longer trade routes and increased vessel utilization. The fleet capacity expansion exceeds the weight demand, signaling potential overcapacity concerns in some sectors. And the eco-speeding trends moderate deadweight demand growth, affecting overall tonnage requirements. Capesize and handysize vessels are expected to outperform this year, perhaps in the Ultramax sector, and this is because of combination of trade demand dynamics and new vessel deliveries. The Capesize will see some market strength, not only because of the Volsat trade, but also because of the opportunity that comes with U.S. and India trading coking coal that happens in Capesize vessels. We see Handysize being resilient, and unfortunately the Panamax and Ultramax sector will see some softening, also because of the great deliveries that are expected the next years. The crude tanker is expected to maintain stability in 2025, with projections showing moderate growth in crude trade volumes and ton-miles, where VLCCs are likely to see the most upside, benefiting from increased long-haul crude flows and geopolitical trade shifts. The fleet growth for the crude oil tanker fleet remains in check. However, we have to be cautious of any demand volatility that will remain a risk, as it's largely influenced by global oil production policies and geopolitical uncertainties. The product tanker fleet is projected to grow by almost 6%, which could put downward pressure on freight rates. However, despite this fleet expansion, product tanker demands remains resilient, supporting by shifting trade routes and long-haul refining routes. Key drivers are the high refinery exports from Asia and the Middle East, leading to increased ton-mile demand. So VMR and LR segments may see some mixed performance. We expect LR2s benefiting from long-haul arbitrage flows, while MRs face headwinds from regional fleet oversupplies. The container market faces a complex transition in 2025 as trade patterns cease and fleet expansion continues. There will be this gradual unwinding of the Red Sea rerouting that will actually create minus one growth on voyage distance and minus 1% growth in trade as voyage distance is shortened. There will be supply demand pressures from an increasing fleet and the trade tariff risks that are emerging and are creating some problems for the container market. So now we will turn our attention to the ongoing transition in fleet fueling and the progress being made to meet 2030, to the IMO 2030 short-term measures. So the industry is moving gradually to what we want to say net zero. We have started by introducing energy-saving devices. However, as shown in the graph on the left, the uptake on new technologies remains uneven, and these percentage points on the graph are in terms of the total kilometers fleet in number, not in deadweight terms. So it's actually how many ships have put ESDs or other energy efficiency technologies. So we have 6% of the fleet is scrubber fitted. We would expect a larger percentage there. Only 9% is classified as eco at the moment, and 82% of the order book is classified as eco for the years to come. We have 2% with alternative fuel capabilities, and 9% are equipped with at least guns of ESD technology. However, we see several challenges that will save future decisions. So we have the speed of light challenges. So based on the current fleet conditions, around half of the fleet of tankers, dry bulk carriers and containers are expected to be rated with a CII rating of D or E until 2026. There are some cost set challenges because retrofitting older ships is only financially viable for vessels younger than 10 years old, and that's because to comply with all the regulations that are coming, it's not enough just to invest in young energy efficient technology. And then we have this fleet aging trend, which is we have many vessels, more in the oil tanker and container segment, which are about 15 years old. And this is going to save, actually, the renewal and the retrofits are going to play a crucial role in ensuring regulatory compliance and improving energy efficiency as we move towards decarbonization. So I will leave you here with five key takeaways for 2025 and beyond. So turbulence is here to stay. The geopolitical, economic, and trade relationship will defy the market volatility. The decarbonization, as mentioned also before, is a non-negotiable reality. Unfortunately, increase the OPEX from the seafarer by almost 1,000. The sector performance will be uneven across segments and sectors. The trade policies are safe with market dynamics. And adaptability here is key. So fleet optimization is the alignment investment, and anything that you may think of being more sustainable and innovative will separate leaders from laggards. Thank you so much.